welcome to another episode of GT Radio. Tino Magnetta here, and I have a very interesting gentleman with us tonight, Mr. Matthew Bruce. How are you, Matthew?
I'm good. How are you doing?
I'm doing great. And we were having a few chuckles just before this, telling some stories back and forth and getting to know each other. It was pretty funny. Tell me a little bit about your background, where you're from, your family, some of your roots.
Sure. So I was originally born in Burlington, Vermont. At the age of 6 months old, my dad was in the Air Force, and he was transferred to the Elmendorf Air Force Base at the end of the Vietnam War, the very end of the Vietnam War. They were still accepting wounded over in the Elmendorf Air Force Base in Anchorage, Alaska. So we moved all the way to Anchorage, and obviously the Vietnam War ended the next year, 72, 73. And then about the age of four, my parents divorced, and my mom and my two other brothers and I ended up moving to Juneau, Alaska, where I spent the majority of my youth and graduated from high school, Juneau Douglas High School in Juneau, Alaska.
Wow, what was it like living up there?
So Juneau is a wonderful town, small town of about 27, 30,000 people, very family-oriented, amazing education system. I actually had amazing opportunities. My mom was did everything she could for us, put us in sports, and we were all three in gifted and talented programs, and I was in swimming and diving and musical theater, choir, I actually did a lot there, and I was actually a springboard diver in the very end, the last 3 years of high school. I was a springboard diver and ended up diving in college as well, so that was really fun.
That's amazing. Now,
so I can do a, front two and a half and off the 1 meter wall clip. Anyway. I don't know if anyone out there can do a front two and a half off the 1 meter. So,
talk about a stress reliever. You know, okay, I'm gonna do a couple dives here, but it does.
Yeah,
it reduces, doesn't it?
It really takes a lot of internal strength, and you know, you have to believe that you can do it. You have to believe that even though you've splatted 10,000 times trying to perfect the dive, you have to go for it, and you have to continue to get up there every time and go for the dive. You know, it's a really great sport for self-esteem and self-esteem building.
It's a pretty good metaphor for life, too, right?
Yes, absolutely. Get up on the board and keep trying again. I busted my eardrum. I hit my head on the board. I hit my leg on the board. You know.
Wow.
You just you got to get up and go do it again.
Now, your mom was a big influence on you. You were raised by a single mother. You told me some great stuff about her. She's a pretty amazing woman. Can you tell us a little bit about her?
Yes. So she, you know, my mom. Was a little bit of a hippie. She, but she did everything she could to make sure that the three of us were taken care of, that we had everything that we needed. She worked two jobs often. She ran around town after work, running us to sports events and here and back and forth and everywhere, always making sure that we were able to keep involved in sporting activities, after school activities, making sure we were all getting good grades. I mean, she did everything for us and taught us everything that we know about life and how to be good people.
Yeah, and when we were talking, you said that you really got a lot of strength from her. You know,
I did.
The diving when you do the belly flops, or you know, you hurt your head. Back up.
She, you know, every teenager has issues that they go through, and she was there for every single one of them. She helped me through the really worst spots of growing up, and you know, when push comes to shove, she made sure that I had the help that I needed to figure out who I was as a person, and that has made me the person that I am today. She made sure that I knew who I was, and that I knew and believed in myself. And I think
now
that's what every parent's goal is. Yeah, I really
doctor,
did.
Right?
My dad is still a doctor. He's a pathologist And my mom was a nurse. Her mother was a nurse. Her sister was a nurse. You know, medical runs in my family. And at a very young age, I was exposed to the medical field. Obviously, spending time with my dad and in his labs and watching him do his work. And so I thought that that's what I wanted to do. But when I got to college, I was like, oh my God. Biochem and calculus 2 and all these classes, I just was like so overwhelmed with it. I couldn't, and I was failing them. I wasn't doing well with them. And, you know, obviously being a, you know, young adult at that time, I just kind of gave up and decided to try other things, eventually focusing on musical theater. But I really wish now that I would have stuck with it, because I think that I would have been a really great doctor. But, you know, no regrets. It is what it is.
Yeah. Well, I mean, at least you had those aspirations, and but life went into a different direction. Now, you started outside of the casino business. You actually started at the Pittsburgh Opera, right?
Yes, I did. So after college, I ended up in Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania. And I worked temp jobs and that kind of a thing, and then ended up being connected with the arts world, having a degree in musical theater. I ended up I was actually performing for the Pittsburgh Opera in the Pittsburgh Opera Chorus, so I can sing too.
Wow, that's great.
And so I ended up getting a job in the public relations arm of the Pittsburgh Opera, and so I became director of public relations for the Pittsburgh Opera in the late 90s, and that was an amazing experience. They did 4 productions a year. I got to meet amazing performers. One of the guys from Il Divo was in the Pittsburgh Opera Center at Duquesne, coming up, being a young, young performing artist at the time when I was there. So I've met some really amazing people and artists. Sandra Rabanowski, who performs at the Metropolitan Opera, is one of the staple Met singers right now. She performed at the Pittsburgh Opera. I got to meet some incredible artists and conductors while I was there. That was an amazing experience.
You said to me when we talked before, you said that you have to get people to believe in you. What do you mean by that?
So, it's good if you're good, right? Everyone wants to have someone who's good, but good sometimes isn't good enough. I mean, you want to always be good, but in order to get people to believe in you, you have to prove yourself. And in order to prove yourself, you have to provide ideas and suggestions and actually improve the business, right? So make a suggestion or an idea, or come up with ideas and suggestions that cause the business to move forward. And in order for people to believe in you, you have to do that consistently. So you can't just have one great idea and then stop. You have to constantly be coming up with good ideas and coming up with them and getting people to believe in them, convincing people that they're good, whether they're successful or not, the ideas are good. Everyone knows that not everything's going to work, obviously, all the time. But if the majority of the things that you come up with actually end up either improving operations or improving the customer experience, or obviously moving the dial on the bottom line, then that's how people end up believing in you.
Yeah. You have to make more of a concerted effort, right?
Absolutely. It's not just enough to sit on your laurels and just keep moving, you know, coming in and doing your business rote day to day. You gotta study, listen, pay attention.
You went from the Pittsburgh Opera and then into Agua Caliente.
Yeah, actually,
what were some of the things that you had to overcome? I know you had mentioned to me before that transition.
It was very interesting. So from the Pittsburgh Opera, I ended up, it was at the height of the high-tech business before 2000, right? 2002, 1, 2, 2000, 99, 98, 2000, 2001, 2002 time period, where the tech business was going crazy, and everyone was making so much money in the tech business and all the stocks and all of that. So I ended up in LA at a high tech PR agency, and I was in LA for a couple of years, 2 or 3 years. And in LA, we really realized that we wouldn't be able to afford to own our own house. So we decided to move out to the desert and into the Palm Springs area. And I knew that there was only a few real opportunities. Well, there's more than just a few, but that I was interested in the desert. Hospitality industry, there's a lot of hotels, really wonderful 5-star hotels in the desert. And then there's casino industry. And so I started temping again, and ended up at the Spa Resort Casino doing the tour and travel business for the buses that come in. And then I ended up working my way up and transferring over to the Agua Caliente Casino from advertising coordinator to executive assistant to the general manager, players club manager, special events manager, casino marketing manager. And that's how I kind of came through and worked my way up, at least until Agua. There was a huge difference between the casino industry and Indian gaming, obviously, than the corporate world that I had been in for the past 5 years, and before that, obviously, nonprofit arts, which operates very much like the corporate industries. The difference is the culture, and so it was, it was very, very different for me to get into the casino industry.
What were some of the things that you had to overcome?
So, some of the things that I had to overcome were the culture. Like I said before, being good consistently, so that I could. I'm a guy who has goals, and I wanted to reach my goals. My goal was to become a director of marketing. I decided within about a year or two that was my goal, and so in order for me to reach that goal, I had to convince a lot of people that I had skills. And like I said before, to convince people that
kind of earn it,
all these skills, you got to earn it. So I spent put my nose to the grindstone and.
Yeah. Yep.
Went out there every day and came in to add value. That was my goal. When I come into the office every day, I say, what value can I add today that's going to improve something right now or today or for the future of the business?
How did you end up getting the job that you're at now?
So I was at Agua Caliente for 8 years. And I had only had one casino experience, and I knew that in order for me to become a good applicant for a director position, which is they're hard to get. It's hard to become a director. I knew that I needed to get a second casino experience, and I saw an opportunity at Spotlight 29 Casino. And so I applied for it, and it was a very difficult decision to make because I really did really love working for Agua Caliente Casino. And when I came on board, I was the marketing manager, and I was doing new things that I hadn't done at Agua. So I got to do a lot. I got to do database and advertising and media buying. So that made me a much more well-rounded director. Unfortunately, I was hired by a gentleman named Adam Sack, who was the director of marketing at the time. And I don't think we covered this in when we were speaking before, but Adam became ill and came down with stage 4 cancer.
Oh, man.
And he ended up passing very rapidly, so we knew that he had stage 4 cancer, and then it was literally 6 months before he ended up passing.
Wow.
It was a really horrific experience to go through.
I can imagine. My God, for everybody.
For everybody in the department and the entire casino, obviously.
Yeah.
And he was beloved here. He did an excellent job. And I applied for the position after it became available and was lucky enough to get the job.
Oh, that's and I'm sure that he looks over every day.
Absolutely.
We still
my department, and we still use some of his phrases. We honor him to this day. He had some really funky phrases that he would say, and you know, his mannerisms and stuff. We still have Adam Hour every once in a while, if we call it. So he's honored to this very day. Yeah.
What is your message to the younger generation coming up through the ranks?
So, you know, people talk about millennials a lot, right? And they think they're all lazy. I found that to be both true and not true. I think that it just depends on the person, depends on the drive and determination of the young person coming up. In general, the millennials do think that they should have things handed to them, and I do find that to be more or less true, but again, depending on the person. So I would say that even more so than my generation, the millennials need to really pay attention, ask questions, don't be lazy, show up and want to work and learn, and to, you know, ask questions. That's what I did, right? So I studied under, at this point, I can't even count anymore, but when I first started working here, it was like 16 directors of marketing and executive directors of marketing that I studied with and worked with and got to know different sides of the marketing business, from aspects of it and database marketing and all the different facets of marketing itself. And so that's the key, is to ask the questions, keep asking, find out why. Why are we doing this? Why do you think this is the way that it should be done? Why are we sending this offer? Why are we why do we have this promotion? What are we trying to accomplish? That's how I think that the younger generations need to face, especially those who want to move up. One of the things that I've seen is that they don't really know what they want when they arrive. You know, I started in an entry-level position, but I kind of knew I was a little bit more, maybe at a different drive level, or knew more what I wanted. Many of them don't know what they wanted, what they want. So, I've seen some people come in who know what they want, and those who do know what they want, those are easy people to coach, right? If they say, hey, Matthew, I really want to be a host one day, I'm like, really? Okay, that's great. Let's go. But if sit there and they don't show any interest, if they don't show any interest that they want to do, and then just come in, even if they're great employees, if they don't tell me what they want or don't show any interest in advancing in their careers, then maybe I, you know, won't spend as much time with development. If they show interest in development, then they're going to get developed.
Exactly.
That's another.
It's about desire. So it's about
exactly.
Yeah. Where are we now in the casino business, particularly in native casinos, this proliferation of gaming happening?
Well, we're lucky enough here in the Coachella Valley that we don't think that there will be. Well, let me rephrase that. The Agua Caliente casinos are putting in a third casino, but it will be a small casino, and it's in their area. It's not close to us, and we don't really think that it will impact our business. But for the most part, we're pretty much locked in the area that we're in. There probably won't be any more casinos coming in, I don't think. So for us, we really count on our locals casino. We count on the locals. We love our locals. We do everything we can to support our locals and to keep them coming in. And the proliferation of Indian gaming really won't be affecting us, I don't believe, in any time in the near future.
What are some of the things that you love about our business? And what are some of the things that you don't really like? we got to get those.
You know, Absolutely. So, you know, obviously we talked on and about the technology mm-hmm. of the casino industry is amazing, and it's on fire. The advancements are happening so quickly, it's almost hard to keep up and almost, you know, mind-numbing how quickly and how many things there are available in all the systems and the manufacturers and kiosk designs and promotions. And even now you have, you know, cashless still on the horizon. You have all of these amazing technologies that are still the Boss beverage system that's brand new pretty much and being implemented, where you can order drinks from your slot machine. It's just amazing how many new technologies there are, and I love that because that can really expand your business and not easily, but it makes your job as a casino marketer easier, but it's hard to obviously implement. But once it's implemented, it makes it easier. And you know more about your customers than ever before now. We have so many new technologies and advancements in digital marketing that are amazing. I call it digital stalking, really, but it's not really, but it is. Geofencing and mm-hmm. geotargeting, and now address targeting. It's just amazing how far we've come. And I know that you know that because of your business and what you do for your business. So that is what I think is the most exciting thing about being in the marketing side of the casino industry.
Yeah,
the bad side.
Remarkable.
The bad side. Yeah, so I mean, you can't predict hold percentages or how much you're going to hold. You never know what's going to be a hit and not a hit. Sometimes you do have to take risks. I like taking risks, but I like to take measured risks that I know will more than likely be successful, or I have a very, 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 very strong inkling or high percentage will be successful. But you still do have to take risks, and sometimes they don't work, and sometimes you have to go back to the drawing board. The other thing is you know, it's always risky to make changes in the casino industry. Guests are very guests don't like change at your casino. They hate it.
Yeah.
And so mm-hmm. When you make changes, it's going to be difficult. And sometimes you have to stay the course and believe that it will come along. And I've even seen that happen where we've made a change and the guests complain a little bit and grumble and grumble and grumble, but then they actually end up loving it, the change that you've made. And I've also seen the opposite. And then you have to know, okay, well, this didn't work. The guests are complaining. It didn't work. We made a mistake. We need to fix this and go back to the drawing board, get a plan together, and get it changed and back. And then tell them, hey, you know what? We heard you. We believe that you were right. You were right. We're here for you. You were right. We're putting it back to the way you want it, or we're doing this better than the way that you thought we ever could. So those are some of the things that I really don't like is, you know, when you make a mistake or when you take a risk and it doesn't work.
How do you balance work and life in our 24-hour business? It's a hard thing to do.
Yeah, it is. I'm always pretty much thinking about work. I just think I'm born that way. It really never gets turned off. But what I've learned over the years in the industry is that even though I have that work light on in my brain, I don't have to focus on it. I don't have to pay attention to it as much. And so I can unplug when I get home. And
yeah.
I know that my phone will go off and tell me if there's something that I need to pay attention to. Or on the weekends, I'll spend a dedicated certain amount of time to, you know, because I think about work all the time, I'll write all my notes down from the thinking what I've been thinking about all weekend and get it on paper or email myself what I've been thinking about so that it's off of my brain and so I can stop thinking about it and let myself have time off. I think that's how I've developed a good work-life balance. You know, I go home, I cook myself a nice meal, and I watch some TV, and I unplug, and I don't worry about it until the next morning.
Yeah, just try to tune it out as much as you can.
Try to tune it out, yep. Because, you know, it's, I mean, you know, you're always thinking about it, right? You know it's always going to be there.
Yeah. Absolutely.
For those of us.
It's like any other
business. Yep, 24/7, you really can't turn it off. But you can try, you can teach yourself how to turn it off successfully by allowing yourself to unplug.
Casinos and 7-Elevens, 24/7. What things should... Right? I mean, I can't think of anything
absolutely.
Else.
Absolutely.
7
no.
days a week, not even, you know, Christmas and New Year's. I mean, 7-Eleven and casinos. I mean, you know.
That's pretty much
they're
it. You're right.
Take your money anytime. You know? Yeah, I mean, that's it. I was thinking about that the other day. It's wild. It's wild.
It's true. It's true.
Yeah, it is. It is. What things should casino operators and marketers do more of?
So I really think that a lot of casinos don't get involved in the community as much as we should. I know that we all are taught to try to involve the community, even in our promotions, in our large retail promotions. Excuse me. But
Yeah, no problem.
Take a drink of water here.
Yeah, go for it.
The advancements in technology are allowing us to take our business into the community and to involve the community, not only from a charitable donations perspective, but also from a gaming perspective, being able to comp off property, for example, or to work with retailers or restaurants in the local community and getting them to allow you to have your guests use their comp points, for example, or at the gas station if you have one. Those are things, those are new methods that I think are going to be great for the community.
Go ahead, have another drink of water. Yeah, take your time.
Thank you.
Don't worry about it. Yeah.
Sorry about that.
No problem at all. What are some of the defining moments of your career?
Well, obviously becoming director of marketing was a pretty defining moment.
Yeah.
I think I cried, honestly.
Yeah.
It had been a goal of mine, as I mentioned, since basically I started in the casino industry. Not in front of anybody, of course. I've done some big boogie promotions that I'm really proud of. We've expanded business here in the last year in a very successful way that I'm very proud of under my watch. I also got to for a year. Dabble in the entertainment industry. We had lost our entertainment director, and that was nearly shortly after I became director. The director of marketing was no longer here, and so I was tasked to take over the entertainment department, even though I'm not an entertainment specialist. And so that was a huge challenge, and I have to say that I booked some pretty cool shows that did some really good stuff. So that was really fun, and one of my crowning accomplishments, even though we now have a new director of entertainment, which I'm very happy for, because it's not my specialty and it's very hard.
I can imagine.
So I would say, yeah, those couple of things have been really amazing.
Everybody says that about entertainment, no matter who I talk to. It's just so difficult.
Tough.
So many
really
moving parts.
Tough.
And then
really
you have to deal with
find
the
right
egos.
Finding the right
acts,
pricing them right, pro formas,
yeah.
And then, all the writers
everything.
And the production. Oh my, it's just really difficult to do right.
Up to the end of the show and packing up, and you're so exhausted. You need the weekend to recover.
Yep.
Right, you feel like
absolutely.
You played the gig. Oh
yep.
Man, I'm telling
yeah,
you.
It's,
yeah,
it's, you're done. You're
much.
Done when it's over, man. You're just
done.
Toast.
Yeah. Let me see here.
Yeah.
Should we take some calls?
Hey, yeah, absolutely. Sure.
All right. Let me see
absolutely.
What we got on here. I'm sure there's a few surprises in here somewhere. Yeah,
pardon?
Great stuff.
Oh, thank
great
you.
Great stuff. Great, great interview. Yeah. It's been pretty amazing.
I appreciate the opportunity.
Hello, this is Tino Magnata. Do you have a question for Matthew?
Hello,
Tino. Do you have a question for Matthew Bruce? Yes.
Yeah, it's Rogelio. How's it going, Matthew?
Hi, Rogelio.
Good. Hi.
How's it going?
Good. Going good. Finally,
good, good,
spring
good.
Has finally come to North Dakota, so it's good.
Fargo, Fargo.
I know. I know. You can finally see the road. Jeez.
That's
yeah.
a thing.
It's wild.
Yeah. Hey, Matthew. Interesting story about your experience in the performing arts. I'm going to throw you a little curveball here.
Okay.
What the casino business is basically an entertainment. It's under an entertainment umbrella. So. Not
sure.
Talking strictly concert, although that's that's part of it. But we're there to entertain our guests. We're there to, you know, it's a socialized place for them.
Sure.
What would you say? Excuse me. Now I have something in my throat. What would you say is a common factor or a similarity between, or is there one between your history in performing arts and that entertainment and entertaining your guests at your casino? Is there something
yeah.
that you can, something you can say, hey, you know, this is something similar, even though it's two different environments?
Yeah. So, yeah, that's a great question, actually. I actually have gotten that question quite a bit, because when I tell people that I have a Bachelor of Fine Arts in Musical Theater, they're like, what?
Yeah, right.
And, obviously, I'm not afraid to be on stage, right? And so I have no problem. So I was tasked with, you know, running large retail promotions on the casino floor, being on the overhead
mm-hmm.
speaker system, no problem, right? And a lot of people have issues with being on the overhead speaker system or making a show out of a large retail promotion or any event, really, or, you know, special
sure.
events, if you will. And also, you know, being able to be confident and to speak in front of people, that's obviously the other thing. And then I think that the acting skill, I've obviously gained a lot of acting skills, and so that can be very helpful, especially when you need to act in front of guests and you're not in a good mood and you feel really like screaming at them and you can't, so you have to act. And I've really counted on my acting skills, especially in front of very difficult guests. And obviously being in front of guests and putting on huge events and speaking on the overhead system, I mean, literally, you know, hundreds of people standing in front of you. Let me put it this way. When I was at Agua Caliente Casino, we had a dual property promotion giving away $150,000, and it was $75,000 per property. And there was this huge problem with the technology through the software provider, which I will not name. But I was on a stage in our showroom, and everyone was in there. We had food and beverage and seats everywhere, right? And I was on a stage with all this graphics behind me, and it was all big boogie. And we drew a name, and 45 minutes later, the name finally
Holy
appeared.
God.
So I
wow.
had to vamp. I had to vamp in front of this audience for 45 minutes, and my acting skills kicked in hardcore. for that.
I hope you weren't juggling or anything and brought a dog on stage.
No.
Oh man.
Yeah. And how do you get your? But how, you sound. I mean, obviously you can take it over the top. How do you get your? And I'm sure other directors have similar. They may not have the similar issue, or they could have faced it once or twice. How do you get your team members involved? How do you get your team involved in that? Maybe you have one that's not so outgoing. How do you get that person involved?
So, yeah. Every single person that works for you has a different personality and a different methodology and a different way of showing their strengths. And for the most part, every single person that works for me, I know their capabilities and their strengths and their weaknesses. And I think that my objective when I see someone who is not performing to the level that I know that they can perform at is to dig it out of them. So I will assign them tasks and responsibilities that will stretch them and take them out of their comfort zone. So that's how I break down those molds.
Nice.
Great. Thanks,
Rogelio.
Thanks for calling. I really appreciate it.
Thanks for the call. No, I appreciate it.
Thank you, Matthew.
Okay.
Thank you.
Yep. Hello, this is Tino Magnetta. Do you have a question for Matthew Bruce?
Tino. Hello, Tino. This is Thomas. Can you hear me?
Yes,
hello,
you
Tino.
Can. Thomas, how are you? Yes.
Hi, good evening.
Good evening.
Hi, Matthew. Thank you for sharing. Appreciate it. Nice
Hi.
To meet you over the
radio. Nice to meet you.
Great. Matthew, because you've been in the desert for a while, one thing that always interested me because, you know, Spotlight was always location challenged. And
yes.
Then over the years with the Coachella Musical Festival, all of a sudden Coachella is almost world famous. How did that change your marketing approach? Because now, you know, wherever you go, everybody knows about the Coachella Music Festival. They have no idea where it is, but they know about it.
Yes. So, yeah, that's a really great question. And a lot of people think that because all of these people are coming out here to the desert to experience Coachella Fest that we're going to make tons of money, right? And everyone thinks, how can I get money from these people that are coming out to the desert to these festivals? Well, you can't. And so that's basically the truth. I have tried everything that I can, both here at Spotlight, and which is obviously locationally challenged, as you mentioned, but also at Agua Caliente. I did everything from bring us your ticket, we'll give you $150 in free play, to room discounts at Agua Caliente, to special events here at Spotlight. I mean, we've really tried everything. We even had a shuttle service to and from the Coachella Festival that you could come and park here and go to the Coachella Fest. And we made some food and beverage revenue from that, but not much. Getting gaming revenue from the people that are going to the Coachella Festival is really, really, really not. They're here to experience the 3 days of the festival. They get up in the morning, they go to the festival, they spend all of their time and money there, they drink, they eat, they do everything there, and then they go to their hotel or wherever they're staying, which, by the way, everything is marked up 500% to 1,000% in the desert. You can rent, you know, for housing.
Yeah.
And then they get up the next morning and they do it all over again. And then when they're done at the end of the festival, they leave.
Okay.
It does bring obviously local revenue to the grocery stores, and the local community really benefits from the people that are coming to the Coachella Festival and Stagecoach, but from the casino industry, we just have not been able to get any significant dollars.
Mm-hmm. They're just not gamblers. Yeah, not
they're
players.
Just not. They're not interested in gambling. They're not interested in. They're there to experience the festival and all the music and party and
yeah,
the young people
right.
Have a great time.
Yeah. If I may,
yeah,
I have a follow-up question because I was very, very
sure.
impressed when you said, you know, improving the customer's experience is the key to gain trust. And of course, that is such an essential aspect. Looking at the different players, how do you differentiate between, because you call it hospitality customers, but hospitality customers and players are two different breeds, aren't they? And how do you distinguish in your service aspect how you treat casino players versus hospitality customers or guests? Or do you not see it as there?
Well, we don't have a hotel at Spotlight, so unfortunately I'm not able to speak about that from our perspective here. When I was at Agua, obviously I was there when they launched their brand new resort in 2008 and launched that, and the Coachella Festival has grown quite rapidly and ended up with two weeks in the past couple of years, so they're still growing. But when I was at Agua, the hospitality, again, you were able to get room nights and get whatever you wanted to charge for them to stay in the hotel, but not really from a gaming perspective. They just weren't interested. Does that answer your question?
Well, maybe let me rephrase it a little bit, because what I'm trying is to find a distinction, because some of the casinos or most of the casinos don't make a distinction between hospitality customers and players, and there's a different dynamic, because for the players we don't have anything tangible. What do you think is the compelling story, because that's always at the core of marketing? What's the compelling story at Spotlight 29 that kind of shows the culture and creates a uniqueness with which you can work, because that's got to be behind your marketing efforts?
Sure. Absolutely. For us, it's we have a lot of highly frequent players, and we are relying on customer service and our SMART program, our customer service program, and we create an environment where every single person that comes in here gets treated extremely well, and it's like we want to be, you know, the Cheers, if you will, of the desert, so that you come in and everybody knows you, and that's what we've been able to develop here at Spotlight, and why we've been so successful. Especially in the past year or two, we've really stepped up the mark on our customer service program. Obviously, we've grown our technology quite a bit, but we also offer experiences and events and concerts for our local community, so that they know that we're the place to go for Latin entertainment, if you will, because we're obviously in a highly Hispanic marketplace. So we've developed a very strong Latin entertainment program that has worked very well to develop core business within the Latin community, which is our bread and butter right here in the Coachella Valley.
Okay. And that also drives then your gaming revenues.
Absolutely. Mm-hmm.
Absolutely. Okay. Great. Well, thank you, Matthew. I appreciate it. And nice to get to know you.
No problem. Thank you.
Yes.
Thank you, Thomas. Have a good evening.
Thank you.
Thanks.
Some great questions.
Yeah. That was a tough one.
That was a tough one.
Yeah.
Hello.
You know, I would say
also that do you have a question for Matthew?
Hello, can you hear me?
Hello. Yes, we can.
Hello. Oh, hey.
Yes, we can.
Vince, how are you?
Vince, how are you? Good.
Matt, I'm doing well.
Hello.
There's a little bit of a delay. You know, it's funny. Can you hear me okay?
Yes.
Yeah. Me, great.
I think at the moment there are three frustrated actors on the radio station here between the three of us. I was
Hey, I only wanted to be a director. Count me out. I'm not an actor.
I wanted to be a Broadway star.
I sang opera.
They're all neurotic.
Theater. yes, we are.
They're all neurotic.
Absolutely. I found that my educational background served me very well in the casino industry these years, and I had a bunch of questions about that have already been covered. I was looking at some of your promotions, and I think you had one where the guest was actually playing the game at the slot machine, and I was wondering how that's working out for you, if you could give us some insight into that. Sort of like when you say the guests don't always like the new technology, I think that's a relatively new thing to be doing, and I'm just wondering if you could share any of your thoughts on that.
You know, it's worked out extremely well for us. We've obviously just purchased a bunch of new technology and are able to provide a retail promotion at the game. So instead of having calling names or doing whatever, they can actually automatically get a chance to win up to $500 in free play right them there themselves at the game. It's the EBS modules from ACSE, from Scientific Games. It's great. There has been a little bit of they kind of feel the required points. They feel it, and then if they don't win something that they think is worthwhile, then they might But the people who win, more than they ever thought that they should, that they thought that they would, are really, really pleased. So overall, it has done very well for us. I'm going to be playing with the EBS suite. There's so many of them. There's so many modules in the EBS suite. I'm very excited. It's one of the things that I'm really excited about. With this, like I was mentioning about the technology, our next one that we're going to be doing in June is going to be Power Winners. So it'll be random jackpots every half hour, I think the guests are going to maybe probably like that more than this one, because it'll feel more like a hot seat promotion than having to earn the spin as it is currently. But it's working great. And we're very pleased.
Mm-hmm. Great. I wish you luck with that. It sounds like you're ramping up with it as well. Just a quick comment. I know there's a lot of other callers. Do you rely on research at all to sort of get a head start on what your customer, how they might react to a specific change or a promotion or a retail offering or whatever? Do you ever do anything like that?
We have not here. I have done that at other properties. But not here. That's why I always am trying to keep my pulse on what the casino players are saying. I constantly meet with my host staff and with my with the team on the floor and the slot department and even the cage to find out what the guests are saying and what their comments are. And that's the research that I do. I'm constantly trying to feel out what's happening. Anytime we make a change like that, that's how I figure it out. Plus, I'm close with several of the players, and they tell me straight up. So.
That's great. Well, yeah. I would like to propose that you and I do some sort of a duet, and that Tino should. I think you should produce something. I really enjoyed talking. Thank you so much.
It's not a day on property unless I sing a song at some point. So.
All right. We're gonna have to sing us one before the end of the show. Come on, that'll be a first.
not live. I'll have to get warmed up.
Hey, I'll sing an Italian song. I'll sing an Italian song. Molto bene. All right, thanks, Vince.
Thank you so much.
That was funny. Hey, yeah, he's hilarious. Hello, this is Tino Magnata. Do you have a question for Matthew?
Hey, Tino, it's Michael out in Oklahoma. How are you?
Hey, how are you, Michael?
Hey, good, man. Matthew, I hate to continue the barrage of entertainment questions, but
no problem.
You know, it's obviously something that marketers are thinking about all the time, and entertainment I've often called the $100,000 maybe, because you never really know what's going to happen.
Yeah,
and not so much for Spotlight 29, but for the industry as a whole. Do you think we're going to continue to provide comfortable retirements for the 70s and 80s and 90s rock stars? Or do you see the entertainment business moving more towards lifestyle-specific or demographic-specific type entertainment that the options out there are kind of changing for us now?
I agree with you completely on the latter. The staples that began drawing customers to showrooms are waning. They're not going to be around that much longer. I mean, sure, Frankie Valli is still performing, but for how much longer, and how many people are still going to go see him? And many of them are, in my opinion, are getting old for the customers. They're tired of seeing the same acts. But if you find the right, like for example, if you find the right performer, we've had Paquita La del Barrio. I don't know if you know who she is, but she's Franny from the Hood. She's extremely famous in Mexico. She's still on and relevant in the Hispanic community and all over their like E Entertainment Network for the Hispanic community on the TV.
Mm-hmm.
And she's still
Univision and all that stuff.
Univision, yeah exactly. Baco y Gordo, I think is the name of the show that's
mm-hmm.
the famous one. And she sells out every year, and we've had her every year, but she's amazing, and everybody still wants to come and see her. But on the same hand, we're trying new things. We've tried bailes. We're doing a rap jam this summer. We're gonna try a Spanish comedy jam this summer. We're trying new things that are more genre specific, like you're saying, more targeted. We're also doing a Pop 2000 tour this summer, but then we're also bringing back, our tried and true, always going to sell out shows. So let me also put it this way: we tried some countries. We thought country would do really well here because in season country has done really really well and sold out and or. We, even if it didn't sell out, we made a lot of money on the casino floor for the country. So we thought, oh, even if it doesn't sell out, we're going to make a boatload on the floor. And so when I was over entertainment, we purposely tried to book some new up-and-coming country stars. It didn't work. They didn't sell, and we didn't make the money on the casino floor. So that tells me that, you have to know who your audience is and maybe try to balance a little bit and give them a little bit of something for everybody, but know who your audience really loves the most.
All right. Do you find that it's harder to convince the GMs and the budget people of the world to try something different? And, I see different properties doing things like, I don't know, tattoo festivals or game shows or having a Game of Thrones star show up and hang out with your VIPs. Is that harder to do
mm-hmm.
for you than it is for the safe and have Hall & Oates come out?
I'm lucky. Well, let me put it this way. Previously, I had my GM was a little more risk adverse, so convincing him to do more risky things was a little bit more difficult. I'm lucky enough now that with the right reasoning, the right strategy, the right concept, and knowing our demographic and who our audience is, it's a little more easy to paper it for him and to convince him that it'll work. We are going to try a game show this fall. We haven't done one in a long time. So, it is. It's difficult to convince. They want to know that it's. They don't want to take risks. They don't want to lose money, right? So, as long as you can, performing is critical, and obviously in the entertainment business, and knowing how much your production costs are going to be and how much the act is going to be. And we've stopped even using gaming revenue in our performance. So if it doesn't paper without gaming revenue, we're not going to do it.
Wow.
The gaming revenue
is
all extra.
Hey, thanks for sharing your story. It's been very interesting.
You're welcome.
To it, and you guys
no
have
problem.
A great show.
You too. Thank you.
Michael, thanks for calling in.
Oh, you bet.
Hello, Tino Magnetta. Do you have a question for Matthew?
I do. Hi, Tino. How are you?
Good, good. How about yourself?
Good, good. Thanks. Hey, Matthew, great show.
Thank you. Hi, how are you?
Good, thank you. This is Rob Watson, and you know, you talked about a game show. It's funny. I did a game show at a casino, and I was Rob Barker in The Prize Is Right, and we had a huge turnout for it.
Good. Yeah.
They thought it was Bob Barker, not Rob Barker, but no, I think that's interesting.
See, acting skills right there.
Yeah. What was the, and I have a couple of quick questions, what was the best Latin entertainer that you said that you booked down there?
You know what, my brain can't remember. Let me look at that. Hang on 1 second. It was last year. We had booked, and oh, geez, my brain. I can't remember his name off the top of my head.
Oh, that's right. We'll circle back around to that one. So we.
Sure.
While you're asking
your next one, I'll find it.
Okay.
He's operating.
Yeah.
Yeah. Multitasking.
Yes.
So I was looking at a study, and it said 80% of millennials were willing to give up Netflix, 77% coffee, 73% alcohol to travel and for unique experiences. So, mm-hmm. with I guess your properties or with gaming in general, you know, how do you think that we can offer maybe unique experiences to customers or the millennials to get them to game or trial the property, you know, such as flaming desserts, right? Or, you know, you kind of have different action things where, you know, you can't go everywhere and, you know, be served a flaming dessert. You know, they don't do the whole show. Or, you know, so you hit a jackpot and, you know, waterfalls, you know, going off or something's happening at that machine. But what's your thoughts on maybe taking some of that gaming and also some of the amenities on property where it's not just a restaurant, but it's such a unique experience that it might attract the millennials who are willing to give up all those things if we provided that type of unique experience for them.
Yeah, no, I've seen that research and I've studied that as well. It's obviously, and a lot of marketers and from what I know, casino contractors and architects are beginning to involve or reconstruct or rebuild or put in place these new concepts where it's experience based. Obviously, Las Vegas is the prime example, right? Everything is that's what they're all about. They're all about the experience, and that's how they get all of their. You know, it's all about beverage and food and beverage revenue out there these days, and concert revenue. So, in the Indian gaming casino industry, it's a little more difficult. I think that if you're a huge, large casino like Pechanga or one of the large casinos, maybe you have more discretionary funds that you can allocate to that. But casinos like ours, you really have to be careful about where you put your money. And we are looking at doing experience-based experiences, like experience-based probably food and beverage outlets is more along the lines of where we would end up going. I think that from a non-gaming perspective, that once they were here and they had that experience, they may be willing to go on the casino floor. I don't know about at the game, but that's where we're for sure thinking. I think that it's that we all should be looking at that actually.
Cool.
Great.
Hey.
Thank
yeah,
you, buddy.
Stuff.
Really appreciate you calling in.
Thank you for the question.
Hey, you bet. Thank you, Matthew. Thank you, Tino.
Thank you.
Bye-bye. Well, the end of the show, and it's been fantastic. A lot of good questions. Thank
yeah,
you for coming on.
Really great questions.
It. And, yeah.
At the time of my life,
stuff, like
Tino.
Yeah, good. Thank you, buddy.
I really had a good time.
On.
I really appreciate
and,
it.
And we want you to come back on sometime.
I hope it was useful.
Very. Thank you so much. Have a good evening.
Thank you very much. You have a take care and take care of yourself,
bye-bye.
All right? All right.
Thank
bye-bye.
You. Bye-bye. Well, that was great. I mean, he is a very, very interesting guy and got a lot to say. Next week, Monday, I have Danny Gutierrez and Bob Brooker. These guys are old time Vegas guys. They go back to the 50s. So it's going to be very, very interesting listening to some of their stories. And I'm talking the days where people used to take suitcases out of the cage, just like a casino. Remember, everybody's got a story to tell. You just have to have time to listen. Have a good evening and God bless.